Hello, and welcome to a podcast from the EDUCAUSE Learning Initiative 2010 Annual Meeting. You can find more podcasts like this on a variety of topics by visiting www.educause.edu/podcasts. Or you can find us on iTunes by searching for EDUCAUSE. On this podcast, we feature a session from Paul Wallace, Assistant Professor of Instructional Technology for Leadership and Educational Studies at Appalachian State University. His session is Some of My Students Are Not Human, Avatar Interaction and Collaboration in Virtual Worlds.
Virtual Worlds for Education, most of you are probably using Virtual Worlds at your institution. At Appalachian State, we've been using Virtual Worlds for about 8 or 9 years. Very much predates I started there 2 years ago. My department chair, Dick Rydell, and John Tashner, a couple others have been working on Virtual Worlds. Mostly using a program called Active Worlds. And I don't think it's as popular as Second Life. You often hear sessions on Second Life, but you don't see that many on Active Worlds. But Active Worlds has been around for a long time. That was one of the reasons it was available 8 or 9 years ago. We also use a little program called Teleplace, and I'll show you a couple examples of these in a second. Just recently, this semester, actually I'm starting to use a program called VenueGen. Active Worlds, AT Zone, as I mentioned, is our instance of Virtual World, and it's for our instructional technology program. It started out for instructional technology, but there are some other programs now that are using it on campus. It's been about 9 years. I don't know the exact date. I'll have to go back and ask Dick for history on this again. But it was developed to be a community of learners throughout North Carolina. The environment for this is the Active Worlds browser. It's a 3D world. And right now we have more than about 2,500 students. I was adding some students the other day, and I noticed that we were getting over that 2,500 mark. We have students, we have faculty, we have staff, we have guest speakers. We keep alumni so they can always come back and visit the zone and work with our students. So we really do want it to be a community. I'm going to switch quickly over to the Active Worlds browser in case you've never seen it. It's not as realistic as some other 3D worlds, but it does have some nice qualities about it. One of those is that it's very lightweight, so it's very easy to access this on obviously a broadband connection, but you can also use dial-up. So even 9 years ago, they were using dial-up connections to access this. Courses started with their own separate spaces. So what you're looking at right now, it's a live feed, and I might have to. What you can see there in the 3D window is a course. It's really our introductory course in instructional technology, and we've laid this out in a visual way, context. There's to the left, it's called the saloon, and that's a place where you can go and talk. So we have tables and chairs in there. And don't want to move around too much in this, but just let me show you that these facilities exist. And tables and chairs, and students can go in and join a chat, an audio chat, a voice over IP chat in there. We also, on the other side, had a Seeker's Corral, and this area has different resources that students can click on, and it opens up a web browser. Right? So, it's pretty basic-looking technology, but it does work, and it's been a real workhorse for us because we have a lot of places in Western North Carolina that don't have the best internet connection, so we can still have our students accessing our courses through the AET zone using Active Worlds. All of our program is cohort-based, so we start up about 4 cohorts a year of about 15 students each. Most of them are full-time teachers in Western North Carolina schools. And also, there are a few campus classes. Actually, this is the first semester I've ever had. I've only been there a year and a half, but this is the first semester I've had a course on campus. So we do a lot of these either online. We're moving more towards online only, but some are also blended so that we drive to extension sites around the western part of the state. We stress collaborative group work in all of our classes. And that's a very important aspect of the virtual worlds. It allows us to create these environments where our students can work collaboratively. And also, virtual worlds provide a sense of the presence. I know you hear that a lot, but we hear that constantly from our students, that they feel like they're part of a community, more so than when we use text-only materials. So being in the AET zone and having an avatar, a graphical figure that represents them, allows them to feel like they're part of a community of learners. I mentioned a couple minutes ago that our courses started out having these separate spaces. We still use them, but we also have a place that we call the commons, and that's my home, so I'm going to go back there. And the commons could be something like at the quad, if you have a university where you have a central area where a lot of people gather and play frisbee and things. We have this common space that we're trying to develop now and use primarily as the first place that students go when they enter the zone. Because we think that having cross-cohort collaboration, having cross-program collaboration is very important. And they can't do that if they're isolated into these learning spaces out in other places. So we have some information garden, that's the library. We have some other things that happen here. We often have guest speakers and things here in the commons area. We like to think that there's some serendipitous interactions that could happen. And that's why we want to continue to have a commons area where people first go when they enter the zone. Drawbacks of this program, it's Windows only. So I'm running this on a Mac, but I've got a virtual machine running. But some of our students, we're getting more and more students that have Macs. I can see in this room quite a few Macs too. So they always say, you know, why do we have a Windows only program? So we're looking for more cross-platform applications for the future. Another limitation of Active Worlds is the audio support. The ability to use audio chat, but it goes across the whole world, the whole commons area. So if you want to just talk to someone in a small group, then we have to use a plug-in, some other application that we can host these audio chat rooms and text chat rooms. So it has some drawbacks, and we've been looking to replace it with something else. And one of those applications is a program called Teleplace. So I'm in Teleplace right now. Nice thing about this is cross-platform. It supports some things that Active Worlds doesn't support, and it's been a while since I've done classes in Second Life, so I can't really compare it to Second Life. But one of the nice things about Teleplace is that you can share documents very easily. So I have some little files here that are web pages, and all I have to do is click and drag and put them on the wall. And they will that will launch a browser, and everyone can interact with this web page. So you wouldn't necessarily want to have everyone interacting with it at the same time. This could just as easily be a Microsoft Word document, so we could have editing capabilities in here so that groups could work on documents together, or any of the Microsoft Office tools. This also has a very, it makes it very easy to create these sound rooms or places where small groups can go and talk without other people hearing. So we can easily have a class meet in this large room, and then I can send them off into one of these three chat rooms to work on a project together. So anything that they talk about in here can't be heard in the other rooms. It's not completely secretive, you know. Anyone can still walk in here, but it doesn't interact with or affect other conversations happening in other rooms. We can also have boards like this one where people can leave sticky notes. So if they want to leave a comment for someone, or they can start a discussion board right here. So there's a topic card which allows usually me as the instructor, but other students could start a topic in here and have others react to that. So it's nice to be able to embed all of these and not have to use separate programs to do that, and to have these interactions, which I call avatar-to-avatar interactions. And so I can look at the other avatars and directly speak to them. So it's a nice little program. The other one that I'm looking at this semester is a program called VenueGen. I'm not sure if you've heard of that, but it actually works within a browser, so it's a plug-in. All you need to do is give someone a URL, and they can access your room. One of the nice things about this, the reason I'm looking into it, it's very more realistic than the other 3D worlds. The avatars could be, you can easily map your own face if you have a photograph of yourself. You can create an avatar that looks exactly like you. So it's very realistic avatars, and also very realistic environments. It does take up a little bit of bandwidth, though, and also it's Windows only again. So I hope they come out with a Mac version. But the realism is something I think that's going to be important, and I'm going to get to that in hopefully a couple minutes here. So virtual worlds, I just want to give you an overview of what we're using as virtual worlds. The avatars within these worlds vary, and they're often very different. But the avatars generally are something that the students can choose from a list or sometimes create from some prototype. So I know many of you have used Second Life and you've played around with the avatar creation in that. I had an example. I can just show you a couple of examples of the avatars. If, for instance, Active Worlds, this is my avatar. It's a little more cartoonish than in some of the other virtual worlds. It's not as realistic as some in Second Life. But it does give you some capabilities of changing the looks of it. And this is as close as I can get to myself looking. And the avatars in Teleplace, if I can get to the mirror, just click on it. There are some possibilities of more human-looking avatars, but the default one is really more of a simple face with a photograph on it. So we can have our students have their photographs in class on their avatars. There's an idea that, or a philosophy, if you will, a philosophical belief that some people enter these worlds to try to change themselves or to create a new persona, and others simply to extend their real life. So this is augmentation or immersion. How many of you, if I could just ask, show of hands, how many of you that use virtual worlds want to actually create a character that's not yourself? I guess you might not be inclined to tell me about that today, but actually, okay, so there's actually more than my students report. So the idea here, for instance, myself, my avatar in Active Worlds is something that I consider to be an extension of myself. It's not something completely different. But some people will create an avatar that is not in any way related to how they look. So this is more immersion. But most studies have found that users of virtual worlds tend to be augmentationists, if that's the word. They like to augment, that is, just to extend their real-world activities into the virtual world, not create a new character for themselves necessarily. So they do choose characters that tend to be like themselves physically. They match their own gender. Studies that I'm doing show that they tend to match their own ethnicity when they choose the looks of an avatar. And also, other studies have shown they will idealize themselves, right? So my avatar in a couple of these worlds is a bit taller than I am, has more hair, a little bit younger, some things that might make it more attractive than we are in real life. So is this important? I think it is. The choice of the avatar is going to affect social interaction. So the second thing here, negative social attitudes such as prejudice can be based on appearance. So the quality and extent of any collaboration in a virtual world may be the same as in a real world based on what kind of avatars you're interacting with. So my question that will not necessarily answer, but what I'm working on in the research here is what happens when students collaborate with avatars that are different from themselves. So we can have ethnic differences. We can have people that are interacting with animals and robots and vegetables and other types of creatures. So the first part, started doing some research on this about 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. And I was living in Guam, or on Guam. It's an island out in the Pacific. And I worked at the University of Guam for a few years. And we were looking at distance education in Micronesia. That's the Micronesia area of the world. And some things about Guam, there's a lot of tourism. The main industry is tourism from Japan. I think about 100,000 tourists a month visit Guam now. So that brought in an industry of tourism, which is a good industry to work in, so a lot of people immigrated there from the Federated States of Micronesia. So the FSM had a large migration of immigrants to Guam and Saipan, another island north of there. And with the rise in immigration came a rise in prejudice and negative attitudes towards these newcomers. And it often arose in courses that I was teaching. I would hear people say, I don't want to work with that person because they're so-and-so, or they're from there, and they're from this island. And so we got a lot of this in class. So as I was thinking about distance education, I was wondering if these same things would happen if we were going to have a virtual world. I was really exploring the idea of a virtual world across Micronesia. But if people can't get along necessarily in these collaborative groups, that was going to be a problem. So I really had to ask the question, using virtual worlds for education in this place to students in this population. First of all, I wanted to know if they were going to choose avatars that represent themselves physically. And then if they do, I guess regardless of whether they do, is there a difference in the willingness to collaborate with different avatars from different ethnicities? So we had to design some avatars, and I took photos of students, and they gave me their permission to use their photos in presentations and publications. Took photos and used a program that's kind of built into Second Life that's called AvMaker. It's made by a company called Cyber Extruder. Other programs have this also. I mentioned VenueGen has the ability to take a photograph and create an avatar, a 3D avatar, out of that face. So we created these with some students on campus. And it provided us a set of avatars that had some, what we considered, somewhat realistic-looking facial features. So here was our set of avatars, male and female, for a few different ethnicities that are common. Chamorro, which is native folks from Guam. Filipino, which is a large immigrant population. Micronesian and Caucasian or European settlers. Once we had the avatars, we had to look into how we were going to measure willingness to collaborate. So there was an instrument that's been used since, I think, the 1920s called the social distance scale. It's been used in a lot of social research. And it is a measure of how close you're willing to participate in social contacts with people from different races or ethnic groups. And this is the scale. It's very short. It's very easy to use. So if you can see at the top, someone could answer, I'd be okay with this person, with this ethnic group, as a relative of mine by marriage. Or at the very bottom, you can see, I'd exclude them from my country. So you have this range of options. And a choice, let's say, on number three would mean that you would include everything below that. So if you said, it'd be okay on my street as a neighbor, that means that you're okay also with working alongside and a citizen of my country, okay, but nothing higher than that. So again, this has been used a lot in social research, but we weren't looking exactly at social distance. What I wanted to get at was collaborative distance. So we modified this scale with some things that pertained particularly to collaboration in classrooms. And this was a called the collaborative distance scale. And you can see at the top there, the closest relationship would be a direct partner in a class project, so one-on-one. And the least, or number four, would be I'd exclude them from class. So our students could rate these avatars and say how closely they're willing to work with or collaborate with them. What we found was that there were differences. And the pilot study looked at all the different ethnicities, and we found that to show the mean scores, a lower mean score means more willingness or greater willingness. So a low score means closer, and a high score means further away. So the Filipino avatars were the ones, the sample was just Chamorro and Filipinos at the university, some students that volunteered for this study. They were much more willing to work with, you can see those mean scores, and Filipino and Micronesian were significantly different. So there's a significant difference there in willingness to collaborate with these avatars, whereas the Micronesians were the ones that were considered furthest away. So not really to the point of I'd exclude them from class, but not as close as a direct partner. So there were definitely some differences in and willingness to collaborate. Also, when asked about their choice of avatar for self-representation, getting back to the augmentation or immersion philosophy, most of them, 83%, said that they wanted an avatar that looked like themselves. So these are people that would create an avatar that matched their own physical features. And then also we found differences here between willingness to collaborate based on ethnicity. So there's a good likelihood that some of those prejudices in the world, real world, would extend into these virtual worlds. And that was the first part of this research strand. The second part, I was trying to find reasons why people would have some of these differences, and maybe looking at some personality variables might give us a clue. I picked out a couple of them. One was an idea of sociability. Sociability is essentially people that are skillful and more at ease in social situations. For this line of research, I wanted to look at not just human avatars, but also non-human avatars. Some of that really extended from my own beliefs and my own feelings. Being in Second Life, sometimes I remember I was renting a office space at one time. We were doing classes in Second Life, and our university didn't have a server, so I had to rent some space so we could have a private place to meet. And the landlord came, and she was one of the cat people. I don't know if you've used Second Life a lot. There's a kind of a cat avatar. And I kind of just rolled my eyes when she or he walked into the space, because I thought, that's so silly, you know. But so my own feelings of this came out, and I was wondering if that's true of others. If there's some personality variables that might play into this, that some people are more willing to work with certain avatars than other people. So the research here, the questions were looking at things like, again, we're looking at ethnic groups, opposite sex, because the first study found that there was a difference in willingness to collaborate with avatars that were male or female, depending on the participant. And also to now look at non-human avatars. So we had the avatars from the first study, still had the same group of those, but we added some for this study that were animals and robots. And we had some that were human-like, so they had some anthropomorphic features, or human-like features. As you can see, that there's a couple there on the right that look more like people. They have some human-like characteristics. And again, use this collaborative distance scale, and this time we used not just the human avatars, but we also introduced non-human avatars. And all of them were introduced to everyone, and they rated each of them on the scale. What we found was that highly sociable students, so those people that, there was a scale called the affiliative tendency scale, and that measures how sociable a person is, how affiliative they are, found that the high sociability students were more willing to collaborate with all of these types of avatars. So they were willing to collaborate more closely with those that were of a different ethnicity, of different or opposite sex, and also the non-human avatars, more so than students with low affiliative tendency scores. Beyond that, for some reason I went beyond that and said, all right, well, the lowest scores for these are always the robots. And they're always the robots that don't have any human-like features, so they're non-anthropomorphic robots. So I was wondering if there's anything that would lend or tell us what type of person would be more willing to work with these type of avatars. So an idea of emotional empathy. And that is feeling what another person feels, or experiencing another's emotional experiences. And there's a scale for that called the emotional empathy scale. And the research questions for that are very similar to the other ones, but are still students with higher emotional empathy more willing to collaborate with non-human avatars? And looking at specifics, anthropomorphic features, human-like features, zoomorphic animal features, the characteristics, and also the robot characteristics. So we had a matrix of different types of avatars. And that is similar. We had more avatars than this, but those represent some of those. So you'll see that some of the animals are really just basic animals. Others have anthropomorphic features. Some of the robots have really no human-like qualities, and others have facial features or other body parts that are more human-like. So we had these two or four different kinds of avatars. We had the collaborative distance scale again, and the balanced emotional empathy scale or test, which is what measures a person's emotional empathy, and found that students with higher emotional empathy were more willing to collaborate with the non-human avatars in general. So if you take the whole collection of avatars and say the non-human ones and the human ones, there was a significant difference in willingness to collaborate closely with the non-human ones. Also with the robot avatars, the high emotional empathy folks were willing to collaborate more closely with them than the others that were had lower emotional empathy scores. And also avatars with anthropomorphic features. But we didn't find any difference in the animal characters. So they were very similar in terms of willingness to collaborate. So I'm thinking that the anthropomorphic, the human-like quality has something to do with this. Okay, part three. I hope I'm not going too quickly or too slowly, but 10 more minutes, I suppose, on this, plus some questions. The last part of this is looking at communication types and virtual worlds. And I mentioned that I had been living in Guam before I came back stateside about 2 years ago. Well, before that, for about 8 years, I was living in Japan and Indonesia and China. And I had the opportunity to work at a university in Japan, teach at a university. I was working there off first in developing web applications, and I was also teaching as an adjunct. And we spent a year, my wife and I, in Indonesia doing volunteer work mostly, but I was a professor in China for a semester. So I had a lot of different kinds of experiences there, but I definitely taught quite a few classes also. And I had noticed that there were big differences in the way, especially in China and Japan, that the students communicate in class, or in some cases don't communicate in class. I had a student, one of my graduate students in China, instructional technology, that told me he had never spoken in class before. He had never been asked to speak in class before. Right? So it's a very different type of teaching, but it's also different. They have different types of communication. And one of the theories is about high context and low context. And most of the countries in Asia are more tend towards the high context type of communication style. Here's a chart between looking at different aspects of high context and low context. And just for a minute, take a look at that and try to gauge where you yourself would fall. Are you more along the continuum at high context or low context? And I'll ask you in just a second. Are many people in here high context, or do you feel that you rely on things that are not direct messages, that it's important that nonverbal communication, you have high respect for authority, so you don't necessarily disagree openly? You don't necessarily have to raise your hands, but there are, within any culture, there are both high context and low context. High context, I mentioned many times in Middle East, Asia, Africa, these countries have more, if you will, generally more people that are high context communicators, whereas North America and some parts of Western Europe often have more that are low context. So I would say you probably have more in here that we're feeling towards that right-hand side, that interested in direct messages, discussions that end with actions, that type of thing. Well, I was interested in studying this. One of the reasons we're looking at expanding our program, as many others are, nationally and internationally. And I think it's very important as we look at international expansion that we consider things that are different in different cultures. And it's probably true that communication types differ, but also we have different communication, we have students in this country that have different communication types also. What I did was, for this, is a pilot study that I just finished up a few months ago, and I was taking a look at just some of my students and others in the program. So they were really not a cross-cultural study, but a study from students in North Carolina, mostly the western part of North Carolina. So I used this context communication scale, which is a scale that will give you an idea of which end of the spectrum you are as far as communication type, high context or low context. Students in the high context communication style would prefer virtual environment classrooms that look like real classrooms. High context communication has a lot to do with what's in the environment. So a lot of cues come from the environment. So I expected the students, the high context students, to actually prefer environments not like that old Wild West one that I showed you at the beginning, but more like a classroom, a traditional looking classroom. About avatar preferences, because a high context communicator often relies on nonverbal cues, I had expected them to prefer avatars that had the ability to use gestures. And also more direct avatar-to-avatar conversations, and again, related to that nonverbal aspect of it. The results were a little surprising for me. I found that the high context, outside of the expectations I had, some of the things that I found was that they preferred text-based environments over virtual worlds significantly. So Moodle or Blackboard were preferred over Second Life, Active Worlds, those types of environments. Also, and probably related to this, I think these two are very much related, high context communicators preferred asynchronous communications. So there were a couple of ways to get at this. I was asking about large group discussions or small group discussions. And in both of those, they preferred asynchronous types of communications, for instance, forums, bulletin boards over chat, real-time chat, or using email to ask questions of small group members in their group over audio chat. Reasons, I'm not sure, but one of the expectations or one of the things that I think was happening or is happening here is that high context communicators have a more feeling of authority and respect for others, and they don't want to waste their communication. They don't want to waste your time communicating. So the asynchronous messages might give them more time to think about a quality answer, whereas synchronous, we often talk and talk and talk. We don't maybe get something done. So that could be it. They don't really want unnecessary communication because they see it as disrespectful and a waste of time, which has come out in some other studies. Possibly. I don't know. Also, related to the expectations that I had, avatar gestures was not found to be significant between the high context and low context students, and at least the ones that I studied. Not sure about this, because we would expect them to rely more on nonverbal gestures, but it could be that the answer actually from both high context and low context was we want more nonverbal. So both groups wanted more. So there was really no significant difference because they were both really high. They were both saying, we want more of this. So there just needs to be another way for me to get at this question and look at it in some other ways. Also, the high context preferred less direct avatar-to-avatar communication, which is not what I expected, but possibly, again, due to that synchronous and asynchronous, because the avatar-to-avatar communications would be synchronous conversations. And they did, one expectation that actually did work out or pan out was that they highly preferred traditional-looking classrooms instead of spaces that looked like Wild West scenes, that type of thing. So possible changes, and I'm starting to make some little changes to environments based on these factors, is that I want to have more synchronous and asynchronous capabilities in both within the virtual world. And I think I did mention when we were looking at this Teleplace application that it's possible to embed forums and other types of asynchronous conversations into a virtual world. So I'm using that quite a bit now in my classes where students are putting post-it notes and putting threaded discussions on the wall here. So they can have an audio conversation, but they can also extend that for the high context communicators. We can also extend that so that they can contribute on an asynchronous level here. So I have a lot of activities that involve forums and discussion boards that are embedded within the 3D world. And also more traditional spaces. At the beginning, I was always planning to have more untraditional, more outdoor spaces, underwater spaces, just to kind of break out of the mold. But now maybe I'll have to rethink that and say that, you know, we don't have to do it just for the sake of doing it. We have people that I think are telling us that they want more traditional spaces. It makes them feel more comfortable, and this is where learning should take place. Basically, it's the idea. those were the three studies that I had been working on over the past 3 years that were looking at interactions with avatars, collaboration with avatars related to different ethnic characteristics, non-human avatars, now taking a look at differences in communication styles. The next step, I'd like to look at actual cross-cultural studies. So I've got a couple of partners. I'll be going to India next month. I've got a service learning project that my students are working at a distance with some organizations in the southern part of India. But it'll give us an opportunity to use a virtual world in that and be able to test and take a look at some of the differences and the people on both sides of that.
With that, I think we've come to our short break. Paul, thank you so much for sharing your results with us.
A session from the EDUCAUSE Learning Initiative 2010 Annual Meeting. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE. Thanks for listening.